Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I am here with Coach Lauren for another Q&A episode. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing?
Oh, this week has been a dumpster fire. The week from hell. Things have been very unexpected. We had an unexpected hospital stay with our little guy. And yeah, all of my plans blew up rather quickly. I hope you had a better week.
We did. We're kind of in like the lull of winter over here. So nothing too exciting, which is good and bad, obviously. So we're just living life, getting back in the swing of school and all that fun stuff. Sports are picking back up again, but nothing too exciting on my end. Dreary, cold, nasty, rainy weather. It's been kind of a blah week over here, which I guess you would take over your week.
I was going to say unexciting sounds very good. I would trade that for the ambulance ride, the ER visit, the PICU visit, and all of the medical tests that we had to put Cole through this week. Trade that for uneventful in a heartbeat.
Yes, I will take my dreary cold weather because we also are pretty healthy right now. So not to rub it in.
Hey, I hate going through these types of things. I mean, not that I've ever been through this type of thing exactly, but like medical crises and just like familial hardships and just like the suckiest seasons of life. It has always come with some sort of lesson or realization. I am not the person who always wants to look for a silver lining. Like sometimes it's just shitty and circumstances suck and we just want to sit in that suck for a while. That's fine. But we're going to be okay.
You don't realize that your health is all that matters until you don't have it. And that's terrifying. And I can't even imagine as a parent what you had to go through this week.
And maybe that's the lesson right there is like, when life is super scary and health is compromised, it just makes you that much more grateful for the monotonous, uneventful days where everybody is relatively healthy. Maybe that's it. I don't know, because, you know, perspective is everything. And it's so easy to take those days for granted, to take our health for granted. But yeah, Cole gave us quite the scare. For everybody listening who hasn't seen my Instagram stories, the few that I've posted this week, we had an episode of a complex febrile seizure, which is, I suppose, something that happens when a young kid has a fever and their nervous system just is not equipped to handle everything going on. They seize and it's supposed to last just a few minutes, and Cole decided he wanted to challenge that. So yes, we spent a few days in the hospital and life was turned upside down for a while, but he's back home and returning to his normal high energy self. So we are very, very thankful for that. I'm not sure I will survive parenthood, or at least my nervous system may not survive it. I already talked to my husband about needing to increase my anxiety medication yesterday, but I just keep reminding myself so many people have done this. I don't know how. Like, it just makes me so much more appreciative of parents, but it's incredibly hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough to watch your kid go through any struggle, let alone like be seizing on his bedroom floor. Like that's the worst, terrifying, awful.
Yeah. So along that vein, we thought we would compile a list of parenthood related questions, mom related questions that we have received in one way, shape or form, and talk about that today, because I know that there is a large portion of our audience who are moms on top of all of the other amazing things that they do. So Lauren and I are not experts by any means, but we are both moms. We are both parents. Lauren has more expertise than I do, being a mom for longer with more kids to parent than I do, but we thought, okay, maybe we have some insight to share despite not being experts at this whole mom thing.
I please want to preface this by saying that I am not an expert. Me and my husband are always kind of looking at each other thinking like, I don't know, what do we do? Like, what are we supposed to say in this situation? How do we respond to this situation? Which I think is hopefully relatable, that we're all just kind of winging it and doing our best, and you learn some things along the way. And I'm sure we're messing up in a lot of ways too, but I don't know, we're giving it our best effort. I can promise that for the last 12 and a half years, we've given it our best effort and definitely learned some lessons along the way.
I think that that's the most important part. I've heard that, you know, every generation takes how they were raised or how they were parented and takes the good and tries to, you know, continue them, to replicate them, and then makes changes and adjustments as needed with the things that they believe could have been done differently or could have been done better in a more healthy way. And so I think as long as we're willing to acknowledge when we totally fuck it up and then change moving forward, right? Like, as long as we have that failure is feedback mentality, we're doing the best that we can.
I actually have been reading and like following Dr. Becky on Instagram, who I have discovered recently. She's not that new. Like, she's got like millions of followers. She's not some like secret parenting expert, but she's incredible. And one of her biggest points that she likes to make is the power of repair, meaning when you mess up as a parent, whether that means you lost your temper on your kid, you weren't as patient, or, you know, whatever that means, the power of repair is almost more important than getting it right the first time, because it teaches kids, obviously we're all going to fail in life, and it teaches them like, everybody does it. Here's how you respond to that, you know, a genuine apology, looking forward, how am I going to make adjustments? So that's what we've been working on for a while. I've always thought that it was really important that parents apologize to their kids so that kids can see that and model that behavior. Dr. Becky's just really reinforcing it for me lately.
Okay, so you have to tell us what her handle is so we can all go follow her. Is her handle just Dr. Becky?
It might be Dr. Becky at Good Inside, but like A-T, Good Inside. It's all one word, no punctuation at all. D-R B-E-C-K-Y-A-T-G-O-O-D-I-N-S-I-D-E.
Okay. I don't know that I follow her, but I'll take all the parenting advice I can get.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
I love the repair focus though, because my therapist had said that to my husband and I when we were like seeing her together. She had this little expression, I don't think it was hers, but she would reiterate, rupture is required, repair is optional. So like, there's going to be mess ups, there's going to be friction, there's going to be disagreements, whatever. That's required. But whether or not you repair, you apologize, you do it differently moving forward, totally optional. But that's where the healing happens. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
Okay, let's dive into our questions. First and foremost, I think this is one a lot of us can relate to. Question number one is, how the heck do you make time for yourself or your goals when you have kids?
It's really hard. I do want to like preface it by saying like, it is a challenge. There's no doubt about that, right? You have these little human beings that rely on you for, you know, the phase of parenting you're in, he literally relies on you for every single thing that he needs. I am at a different phase and it's a different kind of requirement needed for me, but it's still very all consuming and it's hard, right? It takes a lot of energy from you. So I always say this, I think you have to be intentional about finding the time, because no one's going to find it for you. Like, your kids aren't all of a sudden going to be like, hey, mom needs an hour. That's not going to happen. So you have to be very intentional and proactive about creating that time for you, whether that means like literally putting it on the calendar. For me, it means early morning workouts. I know that's not for everybody, but that's what works for me. It's getting up so that I can ensure that I get my workouts in. My workouts are very important to me. I want to make sure I get them in when I want them. So it 99% of the time requires me to get up early, because so many things pop up during the day that would just kind of take away from that time. I know it. So when they were littler, and I needed a workout in, if I hadn't gotten up early, maybe it'd been a rough night with the kids, I used screen time so that I could get in a 30-minute workout. And that 30-minute workout was probably interrupted 15 times. And it was more about getting it done and not getting it done perfectly. But at this stage of my life, I get up early and I get my workouts in. That's very important to me. I also like to make sure, and I actually like will literally write this down in like a planner, that I do at least two kind of friend outings a month. I find that very restorative to me, like just getting together for coffee or whatever it is with a friend and just talking for an hour and a half with no kids interrupting you. That to me is very important. So I really try to prioritize that. I wish I could say I was better about date nights with my husband, but we are, it's a new year. We're recommitting to monthly just meals out. And then in terms of like the day to day, I figure if I'm going to be cooking anyway, I might as well be cooking my healthy foods. I try to make it as easy as possible. When I, you know, need it to be easy, I set myself up for success with like frozen things that I can pop in the microwave or the air fryer. I meal plan ahead so that it's never like, oh my God, it's a crazy night, let's hit the drive-thru type of things. And it's really just my habits at this point to eat the foods that I eat, make time for my workouts, make time for myself to get away from the kids and kind of just get that energy back. That they suck out of you sometimes. Yeah. Parenting is really hard and all consuming. I say that all the time.
I would only add two things that have been beneficial in the 17 months that I have been a mom. The first is, can you incorporate them? Can you incorporate your kid with the healthy, goal-supportive behavior that you're trying to execute? For example, there are many instances where I can't get to the gym because I'm the default parent and I have Cole. And for whatever reason, maybe he's got the sniffles or something, I don't feel comfortable taking him to the gym daycare. So I'll work out in my garage. And guess who's with me? My little buddy, right? Like I bring him out and I'll, you know, put some toys down on the floor. He may need me seven times throughout that workout, right? He may want to be held or he might want to drink out of my water bottle, whatever. It's not the most efficient workout, but it's getting done. And I like to think that he's also watching me do that. So it's now becoming an expectation that, oh, mom moves her body sometimes, right? Like sometimes I come in the garage while mom does a workout. The same thing goes for like our grocery trips. Would I love to go grocery shopping by myself? Absolutely. Every week though, guess who comes with me? Cole, right? We hit up Costco, we go to the grocery store and we get it done. He may not be the happiest always to do it, although usually he's a pretty happy dude. And that's fine because again, like I'm teaching him, this is something that we do, right? Like we are going to go get our groceries. We're going to move our body in this way. If there's no other option, can I take him for a walk outside? I get it. Sometimes we need space from our kids. Trust me, I recharge by being alone. So I am the first to sign up for alone time away from everybody. But I just think as a parent, sometimes that's not always feasible. So can you incorporate your little one?
I'm like being flooded with memories of when my kids were little. When I used to do my workouts, when I feel like I needed to clarify, they would get their screen time after I was done. Meaning if they played nicely, because I was working out basically in our playroom, right? It was a finished basement. All their toys were down there and my little like weights were down there and they would play around me. And again, interrupt me for sure. And then afterwards they would each get to pick out, they still remember this too, a Cookie Monster. They've made like 5-minute Cookie Monster videos on YouTube that they loved and they would each pick one out and that got them through the workout. Like for 30 minutes, they would play and get excited about watching Cookie Monster at the end of it. With the grocery shopping thing, this is okay. I have to be careful that I'm not one of those people that says like cherish every moment because I know how hard it is. And I know sometimes you just want to go grocery shopping without a little one, but I have like a very clear memory of dropping Sydney off, my youngest, at kindergarten. And I was in the grocery store by myself and I was like, on the verge of a breakdown because I was seeing all the other moms with their little kids. And I was like, I don't have a buddy anymore. Like, oh, and so yes, I understand. I'm not trying to say like enjoy grocery shopping with Cole, but there is now I like look back and I was like, oh, they're little buddies. Like they're all so cute and funny and a pain in the butt, but also really cute.
And I think it's just, now it's just what we do. I don't dread it at all. Like, hey, he just comes along and I think he's growing to expect it too. So it's sort of just like, yeah, this is what we do. Totally fine. Yeah. Same thing with like a weekly food prep. So Cole has a strong preference for mama right now, even if daddy is around. And so if I'm cooking something or preparing something, he's basically like attached to my ankle or wanting to be held. And we're trying to, you know, just kind of teach him that, hey, this is time that mom needs at the stove. The stove is not a place for you. And we can go play with something else, or we can go read a book with dad, like just until mom's finished. So again, just kind of carving out that space. that would be easy to skip or ignore because it's just not the easiest thing to do with a little one. But I just think it's so, one, helpful for me. And also I know in the future it will be helpful for him to know, oh yeah, this is what happened, so that we have food for the week and it's easily accessible. The second thing that I want to share, and I know that this is an incredibly privileged piece of advice because not everyone is in the situation to ask for help, is to ask for help. So it has been hugely beneficial for me to utilize my community. And when I say community, I mean, we recently moved down to Florida where some extended family lives, but we don't have a big like friend community. I haven't gotten plugged into a huge mom community. So I would say my community is pretty small and limited to extended family, but I use that to its fullest extent. My grandparents, cold great grandparents, come to watch him once a week so I can go to the gym. That's the sole purpose of their visit. They get to spend time with him, which they love. He gets, you know, some new playtime. I go to the gym once a week and I know it's a day that I can always get to the gym no matter what. My parents are also Cole's daycare right now while I have my work days. And during those work days, I schedule in my workout so that it can happen and I can actually sit down and eat my meal without, you know, trying to juggle a toddler on one hip while I'm feeding myself. So it's a great opportunity for me to just be able to prioritize the things that are most important to me and to my goals. But I couldn't do that without help. The same is true of my husband. We have conversations all the time where maybe in the evening he comes home from work. I haven't gotten to eat yet. It's kind of late. I also would love to, you know, have some alone time, throw a load of laundry and whatever it is. And I will ask him to just kind of take Cole and be the default parent for a little while so that I can have those minutes to myself to eat. And I think that that's, I don't know, there's probably so much like societal guilt placed on moms, especially to just sort of like make it work, right? Be the person who's everything for everybody. And like, that's just being a mom. And I think maybe what that does is just really kind of shoot us in the foot because we can't be everything to everybody. And it is okay to ask for help if we need it sometimes.
I call such bullshit on that because the pressures on moms are, it's so ridiculous, the standard set for parents, for moms versus dads. It is ridiculous how often I would take my little kids out. I stayed at home with them most of the time. So I was with the three of them all the time. I took them all over St. Louis doing all kinds of fun things. And I heard all the time, oh, Tim is such a good dad, because he would tag along sometimes, or he would take them places too. And Tim is a good dad. He's a good dad. I'm not taking that away from him, but I can't even count the amount of times we heard about what a great dad Tim is versus I don't really ever remember hearing that said about myself, like what a great mom I am. And I really push back on the whole, oh, he's such a good help, because no father would ever describe a mother as a good help. It's just expected that mothers do this. And then when fathers step up and help, they're going above and beyond. And I just call bullshit on the whole thing. Like, they are there to be an equal partner and an equal parent. And maybe again, this might be a little bit of privilege, but for me and like my family and my relationship, it's very important that we each tackle parenting equally. We each do our part. We each help each other out. We each are there for the person when it's like, hey, I've got to tap out. I am just like mentally spent. We each know that we can say that to the other person and the other person will step up as much as they can. So even if you don't have a support system, you know, family, moms, whatever, you and your partner, I think it's so important to build a really solid support system, because you need, like, if you have any kind of health goals and things like that and kids and maybe you're working and whatever else is going on, you need help. It's going to be required. You can't do it all. You will eventually burn out. So I do think I have a very strong opinion on dads, not like quote helping out, just like being an equal partner in the whole thing.
You're so right. I mean, like I said, I'm fairly new to this whole parenting gig. It's incredible the amount of times that someone has complimented Patrick on being a great dad simply because he's holding the baby, you know, when we're out somewhere. Yeah, something wrong there.
Something. So anytime fathers pay attention to their children, oh my God, what a great dad. Like, okay. Yes, he is a great dad, but also what about me?
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that was helpful. I know there's no one easy answer, and that would be great if there was, to help moms and dads everywhere make more time for themselves and for their goals. I think we struggle so much doing it because it is very difficult and very challenging. So perhaps take one of the many nuggets that we shared that feels most relevant and most helpful for you and just try to implement that and see if it helps even the tiniest bit.
I really want to stress too that you are your own person. Like, I'm talking to moms here. You are your own human being who deserves to have time for themselves guilt-free. It's easy to say, right? I know that guilt creeps in, but try to not let it, because you're a human being who has needs, and it's totally valid for you to like do what you need to do to fulfill those needs, to work towards your goals, to get your workouts in, to go grocery shop, whatever it is. Don't feel guilty for doing it. You're not taking time away from your kids. You're really just role modeling to them what it looks like to take care of yourself. I think that with girls too, I'm like, I don't want my daughters to think that what a mom and wife is just somebody who gives and gives and gives and gives and gives and never recharges. So yeah, don't look at it as selfish. Try to push away the guilt, because it's required us for us as human beings to have something for ourselves.
I'm glad you said that. I always think about the quote that is, don't you feel guilty for taking time away from your kids as a mom? And the mom's response was, no, I feel guilty when I'm an asshole to my kids because I didn't take time for myself.
Really good point.
And like, that's so relatable for me. I mean, if I don't get sleep, I am a monster. If I don't have time to, you know, eat something or get a balanced meal or move my body in some way, I am not the best mom that I can be. So I think that that's a great clap back to some of the mom guilt you might feel.
I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. When I'm tired, hungry, or overstimulated, I'm not going to be a good mom. Like, the good mom choice is walking away.
Exactly. Yeah. Tag somebody else in and yeah, do what you need to do. Love that. Okay. This is another good one, Lauren. The question is, I've heard that kids are a primary reason for weight gain. Is that true? Tell us what you know.
I mean, in just like personal experience talking to women, I would say absolutely it's a primary reason for one of the main reasons what we were just talking about, not really having as much time. You have to be much more intentional about finding the time and using it wisely. But also your kids are really like taking over, right? They are. So my kids are older right now. Our schedule are jam-packed with sports and recitals and other kids' birthday parties. There's always a million other kids' birthday parties you're driving to. There's so much going on. The food that kids tend to eat, you know, like they leave a lot of food on their plates maybe, or they're eating things like mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, whatever it is. It's easy to be like grabbing those little bites, looks and tastes off their plates all the time without even realizing it. It's easy to get very overwhelmed. It's easy to eat emotionally, I think, in that way of like, oh my gosh, I'm so stressed out. I'm so overwhelmed. The kids finally got to bed. I'm going to eat this ice cream now. And I'm just going to like dive face first into this pint of ice cream without even thinking about what I'm doing. Like, to me, it makes perfect sense. Kids are hard. They're a big challenge. They're add stress to your life. They add busyness to your life. So it makes a lot of sense to me. And from speaking to other women, that it would lead to some weight gain possibly. What do you think? Do you agree?
100%. Yeah. I don't think it's a causal relationship. So like automatically I have kids, ergo I gain weight, right? It's not an A plus B equals C. It's a trigger, if you will. So like having kids triggers a lack of time. It triggers probably higher stress levels. I would say that's certainly true for me after this week, but definitely triggers heightened emotions. And it triggers access to having more hyperpalatable processed packaged foods lying around. So with those three things in mind, it's just like, so you know how we talk about stress eating sometimes? Simply being stressed does not equal weight gain, right? Just because I am feeling stressed, I am experiencing lots of stressors, doesn't mean that the scale is going to be up. Doesn't mean that I'm going to gain body fat. But because of how I navigate that stress, probably sitting on the couch watching TV instead of going to work out, probably choosing to munch and crunch on something snacky instead of actually eating a well-balanced meal, those are definitely reasons that are supporting weight gain or fat gain in the future. The same is true for kids. So I think it's just circumstantial in that we have to be very, very cautious and protective of our time when we have kids, and we have to work with what we have. So maybe that's a 15-minute walk instead of the 45-minute workout you'd love to get. Maybe it's a protein bar between soccer and piano lessons instead of, you know, the full balanced meal that you'd love to sit down to, or whatever it may be. So it's making the best use of the short time or the little time that we do have, because as parents, we do have less of it. Like we do not all have the same 24 hours in the day. No. Let's be clear.
I've talked about this on here before. I feel like when my like binge restricting was at its worst was when I was staying at home with my kids. My husband was traveling a lot or just working crazy long hours. And I would get to bedtime and they would be asleep. And that was my time. And how I responded to that was by eating, you know, ultra processed foods. I think it's also really important to take ownership of your choices. My kids, yes, my life was a little more stressful at that time, but like you said, it wasn't like a direct result of having kids that I was like binging on these foods at night. I was making that choice, and I needed to kind of own that and take steps to change that. And I think on a, you know, we can all use that on a smaller level. Maybe it's not like an every night binging thing for you, but just owning like, hey, I'm not responding to stress in a way that's making me feel particularly better in the long term, in a way that's supporting my goals long term. I need to own that and I need to change it, because your kids aren't going anywhere. Like, they're here to stay. So it's really about how can you, if you're struggling with this emotional eating, stress eating, not finding the time, what changes can you make that are good enough, might not be perfect, but good enough, and are just kind of inching you towards more goal supportive behaviors that are just making you feel better in the long run. Like, it doesn't feel good to never have a minute for yourself, to live off of your kids' like leftovers and fast food, and to never move your body. Like, that doesn't feel good for anybody. So how can you take those like small steps? What kind of changes can you make to get you feeling a little bit better, and just really take ownership of your choices and your responses to the situation? Because again, your kids aren't going anywhere. They're kids. They're going to be here. They're always going to be stressful. You're always going to be busy with them. But how can you respond differently to it?
I think to your point, a lot of that looks like carving out little pockets of time for yourself throughout the day. And I know that that feels impossible, especially with small children, but maybe like you mentioned earlier, Lauren, that's a 10-minute episode of something like screen time. Even if you don't typically encourage screen time, I get that, but it allows you 10 minutes to sit down and actually eat a meal instead of just grabbing like bites and tastes off your kids' plates, which is not nourishing, right? That's not going to give you the energy or the capacity that you need to survive the day looking after your little ones. So maybe it's something like that, or maybe it's asking grandma or a neighbor or a babysitter to come over for 30 minutes while you do a workout or get a nap or whatever it may be, if you have the ability to do that. Because I think if we just try to survive and like white knuckle our grip through the entire day, that probably means we're not nourishing ourselves from a food perspective, but also we're not nourishing ourselves from an energy, like alone time perspective either. And so then at the end of the day, it's just like a restrict, binge, restrict cycle. We're going to overeat. We're going to feel like we need all of the things because we didn't get anything during the day. So I think it comes down to how can I find tiny, tiny pockets of time to just give myself a couple minutes to breathe deep, or like put on the playlist in the car that like relaxes everybody or calms everybody down. I don't know if that's a thing when they get older, but like Cole has a favorite playlist. And so it's like, oh, okay, mom can get a couple minutes of silence if we put this on for a while.
I don't even want to tell you what like my 10-year-old son listens to. It's awful.
Oh, no.
All into WWE. So he listens to their warm-up songs or walkout songs. I don't even know what it is. It's horrible, horrible. So it does the opposite of relaxing me. It's awful. It's so bad. But that's not allowed in the car, and only with his headphones on. So I'm like, I can't hear this. I'm sorry. I cannot. It's so awful to hear. I wanted to share like a little story that I actually just had with a client this week. She has older kids. They're all, I think her youngest is 12 and her oldest is heading off to, like just headed off to college. And over break, she was saying she didn't quite do as well as she had been doing hitting her goals because she was so mentally drained every day because she had all these kids and their friends over. She's like, I don't think I cooked a meal for less than 8 people over the last 2 weeks. Like, she was exhausted. And we just talked about how, what a good reminder it is that you can't pour from an empty cup. You can't just keep pouring out for everybody around you. And then there was no energy left for her at the end of the day to prioritize her own goals. And, you know, it was a really good conversation and it was really great awareness. And we talked about how we can learn from this and utilize it for spring break and summertime and things like that so that we can not have that same experience. But it just really hit home how important it is to recharge, because your goals can't come last and still expect to make progress on them. They have to be up towards the top of the priority list as much as they can. And I also think it's important to say that there's no right or wrong way to do this. Everybody's family life looks very different. Everybody's schedule looks very different. It kind of reminds me of like, there's no one perfect diet. There's no one perfect way to get in your self-care. It's however it works best for you and your schedule and your family. But the important thing is that you do it.
And can I also suggest using cheat codes? Like, they exist for us to utilize. And what I mean by that is, if I had to feed 8 people, I would order in, but from a goal supportive place, right? So earlier this week, Patrick and I, my husband and I, were in the PICU. My son was there staying overnight, getting all of his testing done. We hadn't eaten anything. By the time we were in a position to get some food, the cafeteria had closed. And then one of the nurses was like, oh, everybody does DoorDash. Just order something. So we looked at DoorDash, which is not something that we typically use. And I was like, it's just as easy to order from, I forget exactly what the name of the place was. We had never ordered from there before. Kava, Cali Kitchen, something like that. It was beautiful. I got this bowl of like brown rice and vegetables with chicken on top. And yes, we ordered some chips and guac. And my husband got like this gorgeous, very well-balanced like plate of steak and sweet potatoes and vegetables. It was just as easy for us to order from there as it would have been for us to order pizza or burgers or whatever. I'm not saying that you can't ever have those things, but sometimes it's just the best case scenario to make a goal supportive choice that somebody else cooks for you. Sometimes it's easier to pay the additional delivery fee to have groceries dropped off at your front door, because getting to the grocery store feels like a huge mountain. And if you don't get there, everybody's going to be eating like cereal and Pop-Tarts for the weekend. So use those cheat codes if you need to. Sometimes I think we beat ourselves up because we're not like Susie Homemaker and, you know, making this homemade thing for everybody. And I know you love to bake, Lauren. So like if someone loves doing that and it recharges them, go for it. But for me, nada, not happening. I'm going to utilize Costco's like rotisserie chicken or shrimp cocktail, or I'm going to order from like Sweet Greens and know that I can get delicious salad that comes to my door or I pick up so easily. Don't be afraid to utilize some of those things.
And also, like, I'm just remembering this. Last night I had kids stuff from 5 to 7 and then 8 to 9. And I had like a half an hour after the first thing, before the second thing, to squeeze in a meal for myself. And I just made some scrambled eggs. Like, it doesn't always have to also be like this beautiful meal either. Like, I had some protein, I had some healthy fats, I had like an English muffin with it. So I got my carbs in. It was still a balanced meal. It didn't have any veggies in it, but it was good enough in the moment. It was what I had time for. It was what I had the mental capacity for. So I also think just like giving yourself a break and finding easy things like that go a really long way too. Like I didn't have to come home and cook a big fancy meal. I just scrambled up some eggs. Like that's all I did, and put something in the toaster. The whole thing took 5 minutes and then I had a decently balanced meal. So yeah, use cheat codes, use convenient, I'm going to put that in quote, like convenient foods in. Just don't put the pressure on yourself to make it perfect all the time, because it's not going to be. That's just setting yourself up for failure.
Do the best you can with what you have. I have a client who consistently relies on Chick-fil-A's grilled nuggets. I forget if she does 1 or 2 orders of them. And I guess they do a kale salad as a side. She was like, so if I'm in a pinch and I'm stuck in the car, I know that I can always get something great from Chick-fil-A. Bam.
I think one of the most under-talked about like hacks is having easy things like that in the back of your mind for... Like eggs are always one of my go-tos. I also love the Eat Bonza. Is that the brand? Like the chickpea pasta?
Yeah, Bonza.
I love the mac and cheese, and I always have frozen veggies, and I just make the mac and cheese and add in some frozen veggies. And it's, again, like a 10-minute easy meal that it's boiling water and microwaving some veggies, and that's it. So I always try to have that kind of, I think it's such an underrated hack to like have a few really crazy, easy, whether it's Chick-fil-A or something you're going to make at home in a few minutes, like have those in the back of your mind. Always have that as an option, a very viable, perfectly good enough option.
Yep. I almost always have a bagged salad in my fridge, mm-hmm. as well as a can of tuna or a can of chicken. And we always have fruit. I mean, hello, if you live with a toddler, you understand fruit is like the commodity, but that's so simple. And it's still very balanced, as goal supportive as anything else could be, but literally there's no cooking, no prep involved.
Love it.
Okay. One final question, because we are long-winded today, as is typical. My 16-year-old is wanting to lose weight and is inquiring about calories. What should I tell her?
My heart always breaks when I hear about young girls, you know, having this desire to lose weight. And I know nothing about this person. You know, she could very well be overweight, or it could be one of those things where she's just not happy with her body, maybe having a little body dysmorphia. So I know nothing about this. However, whatever the situation is, if my daughter came to me with this concern, I would only focus on nutrition by addition. That's and movement that they enjoy. So I would try to put a full kibosh on the calorie talk and really incorporate on, hey, maybe we can eat some more fruits and veggies. Maybe we can, you know, add some more protein to our days. I'll go grocery shopping together and find some foods that this person enjoys. Maybe some more healthful, high fiber, high protein, more nutrient dense foods, but really keep the focus on adding nutritious foods into the diet as opposed to taking anything away. I also think having an environment that sets this girl up for success. I mean, if they really struggle with whatever, like having junk food in the house, you can buy less of it. I'm not saying cut it out. I don't think that would be helpful either. I don't think either extreme is helpful, but maybe having a little bit less junk food in the house and more, you know, junk food, quote, junk food. But having just more nutritious foods in the house that they can add to those meals, or showing like, hey, if you love to have pizza, let's add a little side salad on the side. If you love to have chips, can we have like a whole grain turkey sandwich with it? Things like that, like adding in those more nutritious foods. And then in terms of movement, kind of like we were saying, either get involved, like go for family walks, play basketball or soccer in the backyard, find a sport or some kind of way to move that this girl enjoys. My 12-year-old has never been an athlete. Last summer, she started aerial silks and loves it. Absolutely loves it. For Christmas, now we have an aerial silk hanging in our garage, so she can kind of play around with that whenever. It's a way for her to move that she genuinely enjoys and has fun with. So it was never like you need to go for these walks to lose weight. You need to go for a run. You need to be active. It's very much like, hey, let's all go in the backyard and kick the soccer ball around. Let's go to the park. Let's find something that you love doing and keeping movement fun. And just really, again, I can't say it enough. Don't take the restrictive taking away foods route. Focus on adding in as much nutritious foods as you can.
Agree. And I would just take that one step further and say, I wouldn't even make weight the focus at all, which I know is what you were alluding to, but I would not encourage calorie counting, macro measuring, any sort of numeric focus or outcome focus whatsoever, simply because, or maybe not simply because, but because research shows us time and time again, especially in the eating disorder research, that if we have a young, impressionable, especially adolescent female, because they're already bombarded with media and messaging about body insecurity and weight loss and things of that nature, if we fixate on numbers and weight and body, we're more likely to develop an eating disorder over the long term. So in an effort to avoid that at all costs, and to create a healthy relationship with her body and relationship with food, I would avoid focusing on weight, the size of her body, and or how many calories she's eating, and focus more on how she's feeling, which is what I would recommend for any child, right? Regardless of age. It's like, hey, how do you feel when you eat this food? Or how do you feel when you eat that food? Or if we have a meal that only counts chips, if it only includes chips, how does that feel? Versus if we have the whole grain turkey sandwich and the chips, do you feel like your belly's a little bit fuller afterwards? Like, do you have more energy from that? So just focusing more on how she's performing, how she feels in her body, as opposed to the number on the scale. I don't think that that's a healthy focus for any child to have or any adolescent. And I know that there are people who will disagree, but that's where I stand, just based on what I know of the literature.
Another really important point to make is that if you are picking your own body apart, if you are obsessed with the scale, if you are complaining about how you look in clothes, they're picking up on that. Kids are total sponges. And even at that age, you know, where they might want to act like they're annoyed by everything that you do, they're still listening. You can see it in their behaviors where they, you know, kind of mirror back to you what they've seen you do. So you have to be very intentional about how you're talking about your own body. Ideally, there's no real body talk, but maybe you're saying like, man, I feel so strong after that workout, or God, I loved going for the walk today. It felt so good to get some fresh air, whatever it is. Like, kind of like you said, making it not about the physical body, the scale, but just more about how are you feeling. But I think it's really important to kind of set the tone in the house that bodies are for living, not for looking. How can we just make ourselves feel our best? And it's really important for moms to not be putting their own bodies down in front of their daughters. Like that's such a very strong point that I need to drive home. Like, you can't stand in front of the mirror and complain about, oh my God, my pants are too tight. I don't like how my stomach looks in this. My arms are flabby, and then expect them not to pick up on that. So you do have to be very intentional. And it's never too late to stop doing that behavior too. If you've already been doing it, you realize that you've been doing it. Now is the perfect time to stop and move forward.
So true. I'm glad that you said that, because environment is one of the biggest predictors of success. That's not to say that if you have a child who's struggling with disordered eating or, you know, body dysmorphia or anything like that nature, it's 100% your fault and you must have set a terrible example. That was not my situation. I had parents who were very like all including food focused. There was no body talk in terms of like weight or anything like that. And hey, I still messed up my relationship with food real bad. But I do think that if we look at the majority of adolescent females, they have some role model in their family, maybe not in their immediate family, that is potentially negatively impacting their relationship with food. So check your own relationship with food. It's why it's so important to do the work yourself, do the healing yourself, if you want to set a great example for your little ones or your not so little ones. And I would also, I don't know that you could do this with a 16-year-old. I know nothing about raising teenagers. Lauren, you can speak to this a little bit, but environment goes beyond just immediate family. So if I think back to when I was really in a nasty place with my relationship with food, Instagram wasn't a thing. Thank God. TikTok wasn't a thing. Thank God. But I followed a lot of very, very, very healthy and disordered advice on Tumblr, which is dating me. A lot of people probably don't even know what that is. But I don't know if you could have a conversation with your teenager about, you know, how important it is to follow healthy accounts or, you know, people who are talking about body inclusivity, and maybe try to like eliminate the accounts that are talking aggressively about weight loss or calories. Again, I don't know how receptive a 16-year-old would be to that, but I do think that that's so important. Like, what shows are they watching? Who are they following on social media? Like, are their friends talking about this stuff all the time? You know, I just think that that is a huge influence as well.
We are going a step further and have a pretty strict no social media rule. And I've talked to other parents who are completely on board with that as well. I mean, she's 12 and a half. There's no reason she needs to be on social media. She has a phone with a lot of parental controls on it. And she knows that, like, she knows that we can control a lot of it. I don't see a single benefit coming from having a teenage girl on social media. And this is not a judgment if you've made a different choice for your family. Personally, the goal is to keep them away from it as long as possible. But I also say that knowing that we ultimately have a lot of control. So if we want to keep her away from it, we can keep her away from it. Every study I've ever seen about adolescent girls in particular being on social media has negative outcomes. Why would I allow my daughter to be a part of that? They can't make those decisions for themselves yet. Their brain's not fully developed. So we've been pretty strict about that. We're lucky that my oldest hasn't asked. Like, it's nothing she's interested in. But she's a very different child than my other two. So I have a feeling when they get to that age where they have a phone, it'll be a different conversation. So I'm very lucky right now. My 12 and a half year old doesn't really have any desire, or it's not been an issue in our house. But our plan is, you don't need it at all, at least for the long foreseeable future. So we've taken a pretty hard stance on that. And I that's an important one to me that I'll probably really stick with.
I'm going to circle back around to you by the time Cole's that age, because at that point you will have practiced this multiple times.
It'll be all different by then. Who knows?
That's so true.
We're all just winging it.
I'm terrified. I really am. I'm very much like your 12 and a half year old because I didn't get my first phone until I was driving, right? My parents were pretty concrete on their decision to not have a cell phone in my hands until I was driving. And that was purely for safety reasons, no social media on it to begin with. And I didn't really rebel. I had no desire to rebel or want to go above and beyond that. But I know that that's not the case. And I kind of think that the little one that I have is going to be a little bit of a rebeller, but we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. And I honestly have... Everyone has to do what they feel is best mm-hmm. with their children. And I know there's no one size fits all. So I get that everyone has different parameters and different guidelines. When it comes to nutrition and disordered eating, there is more unhealthy, unhelpful, harmful advice on the internet than there is beneficial health promoting advice. And so that would be a huge detriment, in my opinion, to any impressionable child.
I always think about it like this, I have to check myself as a 37-year-old adult who is fully aware of the negative aspects of social media. I am constantly have to reminding myself not to compare and not to get sucked down that rabbit hole. How can you expect a teenager whose brain is still forming to be able to override that desire, that human impulse to compare, to try to, imitate people that they see that look really good, whether or not that's smoke and mirrors or not, they don't know. They can't see through that at that, For us, it's a very hard line at the moment. So I could change my opinion on it, but for now, that's where I stand. No social media.
That's where we're at. Two moms, one who has been doing this for 12 and a half years, one who's been doing it for 17 months. Not experts. We don't know anything, but we're trying to figure it out while we go.
Nothing. I know nothing.
And I hope that at least something we shared today, one, makes you feel like you're not alone, because you are not. A very small example of this is this week, my life felt like it was turned upside down and I didn't know which way was up. And just sharing a very, very small amount on social media stories as we were navigating this, I had multiple moms reach out saying that they had gone through the same type of seizure situation with their children. And I can't tell you how comforting it is. Not that someone else is going through something equally as miserable as I am, but just to know, oh, thank God, someone else has been there and I can go to them if I need some support, or they can be a sounding board, or I'm not the only one in this type of situation. So I hope that this at the very least allowed you to feel like you are not alone. And more so than that, maybe you found a nugget of something that might be helpful for you to implement in your life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.